This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar, together with Kusu Chuang and Noel Lim. It's 8:35 in the morning. Check the pulse of the Malaysian economy in light of the latest political developments.
Right. The outlook for Malaysia's economy is far from assured, and the continuing rise in COVID-19 infections. So even though we saw a 16% year-on-year GDP growth in the second quarter of 2021, there was still a contraction of 3.9% compared to pre-pandemic levels. And just last week, Bank Negara Malaysia revised its 2021 GDP forecast downwards to between 3 to 4%. Earlier was 6 to 7.5%.
So, in a bid to aid the economic recovery, the government announced relaxed rules for fully vaccinated individuals for all states, even those states that are still in phase one of the national recovery plan. But given the political tumult with Malaysia's third prime minister in 3 years sworn in over the weekend, and the precarious pandemic situation, will the road to recovery remain rocky for Malaysia? And for a view on where the economy is headed, we speak to Firdaus Rosli, chief economist at the Malaysian Rating Corporation Berhad, also known as MARC. Good morning, Firdaus. Thanks for joining us today. Let's start with the relaxation of rules for fully vaccinated individuals. Does this affect your outlook for the economy? Is this a welcome boost?
Hi, good morning, everyone. For now, we are still sticking to our guns with 3.9% growth for financial year 2021. And this is despite the better than expected second quarter of this year's performance of 16.1%. With fiscal deficit, we think will come in at 6.5% of GDP. Debt to GDP will breach 60% and probably inch closer to 65% next year. Inflation, we think, will be at 2.7% despite the low base effect. But in any case, our projection still falls within Bank Negara's significant downward revision of 3 to 4%. So more reopening, we think, will come in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, in terms of that 3% growth, Firdaus, where is it going to come from?
We think that it will most likely come from private consumption, which is very much a staple in the Malaysian economy. It will probably trend somewhere between 55 to 60% of the share of the GDP, and of course, with that, export will lend support to growth as well, to probably somewhere between 5%, circa 5%. So that 3.9% will probably come from those two.
We've had three prime ministers in 3 years, but now that UMNO is back in the top seat, how do you think investors will react?
It's interesting because I think the question should be on political stability. We know for a fact that UMNO's past leadership, the structure of the decision-making at all levels, whether it's political or bureaucracy, was very much clear and predictable. And this is something that may be valuable to investors. So there is a structure to decision-making. But having said that, I'm not here to debate whether those decisions were right or wrong. That's just how it has been under UMNO. But from this perspective alone, like I said, investors will probably be comforted by the fact that the return of UMNO at helm would mean that there will be mega projects. The existing ones will probably continue. There will be new ones. There will be predictability in terms of foreign policy, in terms of balance of power between the East and the West. But then again, having said that, this, in fact, PM Ismail's leadership is an untested formula. So he's not a VP of PM as VP, but he's a PM. He's not a party president. He's not at the state leadership of Pahang, but a Pahang strongman. So in the past, economic prosperity came very much under the leadership, or rather the combination of UMNO president as the prime minister, and that is untested right now. So the second bit of my comment would probably be more of a question mark moving forward. But until that happens, we can foresee that there is some kind of a policy stability moving forward.
Yeah, so from an economic rejuvenation perspective, Firdaus, what are your expectations, and will it involve a heightening of the debt ceiling?
Heightening of the debt ceiling is perhaps a foregone conclusion. As at now, we think that it has breached 60% to GDP. It may inch closer to 65% next year, which means that in the coming parliamentary sitting, we would likely see a revision to the debt ceiling. So that's pretty much it as far as the debt ceiling is concerned.
Firdaus, let's talk about what the priorities of Ismail Sabri's cabinet should be. He gave a national address yesterday, not really saying too much, but what do you think his government should be focusing on?
I think without doubt it would be the economy, more so when we are inching closer to GE15. But I think an immediate priority for PM Ismail will probably to address lockdowns. As it is right now, lockdowns has been the sole interventive measure to curb the spread of COVID-19. And perhaps there should be other ways to do it. I'm not sure, but there is certainly a need for a debate for that. And he needs to address our macroeconomic problems, the slowing growth rates, even with the high debt to GDP, stubbornly high unemployment for a developing nation, overly low inflation by masking its true meaning to oil price cap, stability of ringgit, which has been depreciating since early this year. So I think what he needs to do now is to understand and take note that this crisis is not demand-led. So past interventions may not necessarily work this time around.
We are asking our listeners to vote on our poll whether they think Sabri will have an impact. What impact do you think he could realistically achieve in his tenure before GE15?
I think he would probably progressively reopen the economy. And as the, like I said, you know, this is supply-led crisis, not demand-led. So as you loosen the grip on the economy, then you will see that there will be more economic activities in the near future. As a result of that, there will be slew of feel-good factor with people are able to cross borders, going for holidays, meeting family members, long-lost family members, perhaps, you know, meeting your friends at a coffee house, kids going to school, not missing out on cancer appointments, etc. So as a result of that, within this whatever time period left before GE15, it is so easy to create a feel-good factor. But having said that, though, we know that, you know, as we move towards general elections, even in past general elections, you know, there will be contestation between political rhetorics between both sides. But what we know for a fact is that the opposition would usually use structural problems that that Malaysia has been facing, like the labour market, growth, etc. But now is not the time for that because there are just so many short-term problems that needs to be addressed. So as long as he addressed that, then I guess he is pretty much okay.
Firdaus, who would you like to see as Ismail Sabri's economic and financial advisors, and who do you think he will get instead?
Oh, wow. Can I suggest myself?
I think you should.
I think you should.
Yeah.
We will nominate you happy.
How I wish. I don't know, actually. But I guess it has to be a broad range of stakeholders. But this is not to say that there will be more of the opposition members into the fore. But I'm just saying that the more variety in terms of composition of your advisors, you know, you would see more contrasting views, and there will be a more healthier debate as to what policies should Malaysia go for, and I think that is missing for now, and I don't really care who that person is as long as it's me.
Okay, we'll keep our fingers crossed for you, Firdaus. One last question. Do you have any changes in your expectations for the 12th Malaysia Plan and Budget 2022 from the last time we spoke? I mean, are we still expecting to see these two policy plans being tabled in Parliament in September and October this year? And could we see anything different from Ismail Sabri?
Yeah, interesting question. We would like to see the 12th MP earlier rather than later so that I think investors will be able to have something to hold on to. Right now, we would like to see more mega projects in order to elevate our future growth rates. Our future growth rate is something that we cannot discount. So infrastructure in the East Coast is of highest priority in every sense, whether it's economic, social or political. That's as far as the 12 MPs is concerned. From Budget 2022, now we know that 114 MPs are behind Prime Minister Ismail. We can say that maybe, most likely, the Budget 2022 will be tabled and passed as usual. But in any case, since, as I said, you know, we are inching closer to G15, we expect a much higher OPEX next year. There is a tendency for the incumbent to spend higher in the preceding year of general elections. And this, we have seen this in the past. And it's not just in the case of Malaysia, but everywhere else around the world as well. So we think that fiscal deficit will come in eventually at 6.5%, with debt to GDP closer to 65%, if not 1 or 2 percentage point higher. That's it.
All right, Firdaus, thanks so much for speaking to us and for your insights. That was Firdaus Rosli, Chief Economist at the Malaysian Rating Corporation Berhad, or better known as Mark, talking to us about what the economic outlook could be like under Ismail Sabri's leadership.
As well as his aspirations to advise.
That's right.
Ismail Sabri.
Consider this his application to the government.
65% debt to GDP ratio, foregone conclusion, maybe even 1 or 2% higher. Not sure what to make of that, whether that's a good thing or whether it's a bad thing. Got to spend your way out of trouble, right?
Yes, and household debt is also another worrying trend as well, the rise of debt.
Well, you know we're going to keep watching this space. It is 8:47 in the morning. Up next, what kind of Prime Minister will Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri be? We ask Ben Sufian of the Merdeka Centre. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.